Assalamu alaikum and welcome to KF Talks, where we aim to represent Muslim sisters from varying communities. We'll delve into their struggles and aspirations in the Western world and how they serve Lady Fatima, peace be upon her, in all they do. Today we're talking a little bit about mental health, depression and anxiety mainly. And we are joined today by Sister Hania, who is a cognitive behavioral therapist working in the NHS. Assalamu alaikum Hania, how are you?
Assalamu alaikum Kausar, alhamdulillah, thank you for having me.
No, it's our honor to be joined by you, and inshallah I look forward to having a very insightful conversation about this very important topic and learning a bit more about depression, anxiety, and just different ways we can seek help and available for us.
Inshallah.
So I just wanted to ask, so as a cognitive behavioral therapist, what do you mainly deal with, as in what do you see in your line of work?
So I work in a service called IAPT, stands for Improving Access to Psychological Therapies. Mm-hmm. Now there's IAPT services all across the UK, in every borough, in every city. I work in London, so I work in London IAPT service, and in this service we offer cognitive behavior therapy along other kind of therapies, but I'm a CBT therapist, so I'll just focus on CBT. We offer CBT to people experiencing common mental health problems like depression, anxiety. And I guess the reason I thought it'll be helpful for us to talk about this as well today is that actually a lot of people don't really know a lot about these common mental health problems. You know, they're called common and they are very common, but actually it goes missed, it doesn't get recognized, it doesn't get picked up on, it gets kind of pushed aside, no one really addresses it.
Yeah, it does, it goes by unnoticed for quite some time. Like even the people who suffer themselves, they probably don't notice it until it gets really bad.
Absolutely. And actually, Kausar, that's a really good point you've touched on. A lot of the experience I have working in IAPT is that people from my community, so I'm Iranian, but I see a lot of Iranians, Iraqis, Pakistanis, Indians, generally speaking, the Asian culture, Asian people, they come when it's already too late. So their problems are so severe, it's built up over so many years that now it just takes such a long time to chip away at all of these long-held beliefs, attitudes and behaviors that they've held for such a long time.
It becomes ingrained in them, like, so it's really difficult to shift that kind of mindset.
Absolutely. And they feel hopeless about it too, because it's so ingrained. Definitely. They just feel like there's no shift. And to some degree, I can understand where they're coming from, you know, because they've held it, they've been like that for so long. You know, if you've been depressed for 30 odd years, it's really difficult to now all of a sudden begin to think differently and to be able to realize that actually that's not normal, that you can change that. It becomes a part of them almost.
Cool. And it's really sad that we only decide to seek help when we feel like we've reached the end, like we've reached the end of our tolerance of this mental health issue or problem. And then we're like, okay, fine, now I'm gonna go seek help because there's really nothing I can do, when in fact it's actually, you should be like monitoring your mental health from the very beginning to notice if there's any changes, so that you don't let it go out of hand.
I feel like with the new generation, we need to step in now and sort of raise that awareness, which is why I love what you're doing. You know, raise the awareness, let them know what's going on, let them understand it, and also, you know, chip away at these taboos we have around seeking help. There's nothing wrong with being depressed, with being anxious. I think what's wrong is being ill and not being able to seek support. No one ever says, oh, look at you, you've got cancer, like, oh, don't go get help. No one ever says that about physical health. Why do we have that attitude about mental health? I've spoken to like young people and they still look down at having mental health problems. They use the word crazy and it shocks me. Like,
you know, they see it as a weakness.
Yeah, they really do. And it's such a shame. And I really want us to try and break away from this.
Yeah, and it's also like, from my experience, I feel like our generation is more open to mental health awareness and knowing more, learning more about mental health. And definitely, even in terms of their own mental health. But still, at the same time, we still have this ingrained taboo within us where it's like, okay, like, I know it's good to seek help, but I'm not going to do it because I haven't reached that level yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, why do you have to reach a certain level where you feel like it's out of control and then you seek help?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree.
I just wanted to ask you, Hania, sorry, could you just mention a little bit about cognitive behavioral therapy? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, the name itself kind of explains it a little bit. So it's cognitive behavioral therapy. So what CBT does is that it looks at your thoughts, it looks at your behaviors to try and change how you view the world and the things that you do that are not healthy for your mental health.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times with CBT, it's a lot of work that you need to do outside of the sessions. It's not like the typical kind of therapy that people show on TV where you just sit on a sofa and you talk as a therapist and the therapist starts analyzing you, goes into your past, etc. There's parts of that, but actually the majority of it is trying to collaboratively understand what the problem is, what's maintaining it, and then to think about how you can break that, how you can change those difficulties and break the cycles that are really unhealthy.
Yeah, so and it sort of gives you
being done outside.
Yeah, so you get given sort of like practical steps to continue with after you've left your appointment.
Absolutely. And CBT is really good because it's really good for helping yourself. So when we talk about this taboo stuff, I think, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, yeah, I've got depression, but no, I'm not going to go get help, I'm not in that position yet, I'm not there yet, fair enough. Try and help yourself. You know, there's lots of self-help material, and we'll talk about that today, but there's lots of self-help material that you can access and do it yourself in your own home, in your own comfort, on your own. Because CBT, because there's so much evidence for it now, you know, lots of research evidence for it, I mean.
Yeah, it's very research-based,
Very research-based. And so because of that, there's lots of self-help material already out there, accessible to everyone, to the public. So, you know, like I said, if you're listening to this and you don't want to get help, fair enough, but the stuff that you can do for yourself are plenty.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, even with CBT, you go to the therapist for like a session a week, for example, but most of the work is to, you have to do yourself.
Absolutely, yeah.
Outside of the session,
Okay,
so we're mainly going to discuss depression and anxiety today, because I feel like these are the main issues we have in our community, even though like we have a lot of OCD issues and there are other problems also that may need to be discussed, hopefully, inshallah, in another episode or in another podcast. But could you just tell us a little bit about depression, first of all? Like, what are the causes maybe, or what's the scientific explanations behind it? Just give us a bit of a background.
Sure. So with depression, there's not necessarily, you don't necessarily need to have a cause to be depressed. It can just be, you know, something small that's happened, or it could just be a change in hormones or things. But a lot of the times there is something in the background, like, you know, things you've experienced growing up, if you've had changes, big or small, you know, just starting college, starting school. There's a whole host of reasons why you could feel depressed. And often when we talk about depression in therapy, we try not to think about so much of why you have it. You might try and understand how your background, how your experiences has affected you and how it's made you feel the way you're feeling, but not so much around finding why you've got it. Do you see the difference?
So like seeing the factors that have contributed to you feeling this way.
Absolutely. And trying to make sense of what kind of things you experienced that made you see the world that you're seeing today.
Yeah.
So Just to kind of touch on what kind of symptoms you might want to look out for if you're depressed. I mean, do you, yeah. I'm sure you know a lot about it. What kind of symptoms do you think are related to depression?
So I know, like, with depression, it's different to feeling sad, obviously, because with feeling sad, it's just an emotion. You might feel it for a day or in response to something, whereas mm-hmm. depression is sort of like when you feel really low for mm-hmm. more than 2 weeks, like for months, you've been feeling really low. Yeah. And it's like a really low mood. You feel demotivated, you feel tired all the time. Yeah. Like, from what I understand, like, those are some of the symptoms of depression, but absolutely. Please add on. Yeah,
no, I think you touched on it, and depression is something we've talked a lot about, I think, as a community and as yeah. as, you know, as everyone, like, you know, the British public.
So yeah,
we'll talk about depression a little bit, but actually I want us to focus mostly on anxiety today, because I feel like that's not talked about as much as depression. But the stuff you just said is exactly that, you know, feeling demotivated, feeling tired, there's a sense of feeling worthless, sense of yeah. feeling like you're not good enough. So there's yeah. a lot of loss of confidence with depression.
And low self-esteem.
Absolutely. The more physical side of things are, you know, poor sleep, poor appetite, poor concentration. A lot of people who are in college, school, uni, they might start thinking, oh, I can't concentrate, I can't do the work. Combined with these other symptoms, that's a sign, you know, you need to probably get some help.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of symptoms you experience with depression. In terms of sort of like the treatment for it, it's a lot about doing things that are valuable to you. So, you know, if, for example, you've been feeling depressed and you haven't been able to do anything for yourself for a while because you're so yeah. unmotivated, because you're so tired, it's about trying to tap in to some of those things that you have valued before in the past, or that you've enjoyed doing in the past, and trying to get them back into your life a little bit.
Yeah.
As part of that, I think spirituality is one thing as well, you know, because that's something we would have that kind of spirituality, and so that's something that yeah. we can tap into as well, because it's something we value.
You know, it's a good thing you mentioned spirituality, because I feel like with people who suffer from depression, they, on the one hand, I feel like their faith becomes a bit stronger, because it's the light that they hold on to that prevents yeah. them from, like, going to an extreme or going to, you know, towards self-harm or suicide.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like when you're depressed and demotivated, you're not doing, like, maybe as much worship as you want to, or you're not concentrating as much in your salah, and that can sort of feed into some guilt that you don't feel yeah. like you're being a good Muslim, and it's yeah. a vicious cycle.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then you've got some people in the community saying, oh well, you know, depressed, you only get depression if you have low iman, and yeah, then that just sort of fuels the fire even more.
Absolutely. But by yeah. the way, that statement, it really annoys me.
yeah,
it's just, because it's so wrong. It's such a massive misrepresentation of what depression
huge.
Is,
and yeah.
it really alienates anyone to want to say they're depressed, because it's almost equivalent to, like you said, you don't have a strong enough faith.
Yeah,
and you think about it, it's such an insult, isn't it?
definitely, especially because I just feel like, I don't know, from my experience, when I've experienced depression or depressive episodes, I feel like the only thing that really got me through is my faith.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it makes you feel closer to Allah, because you know that he's the only one you have, he's the only light you have in your life.
Yeah, so this is what I mean about values. So for you and I, our faith might be a value. For someone who doesn't have a faith, their value might be spending time with their family. So it's about tapping into what those values are, and it may be, not maybe, it will always be more than one thing. It may be that, you know, you want to spend more time with your family, or you want to spend time with your friends, but at the same time you want to tap into your spiritual side, you know, pray more, or pray on time, or, you know, read du'as or whatever it may be. So going back to kind of like what you could do if you're feeling depressed, it's kind of tapping into those values, doing those things that you have stopped doing, and
goal setting.
Say, yes, exactly, goal setting. Yeah. But I was just going to say, it's easy to say goal set and do.
Yeah.
it's a whole other ball game actually doing
to actually do it, especially when you're depressed. You just don't have the motivation. You can make a whole to-do list, but in the morning when you wake up, you don't want to get out of bed. It's so difficult.
Absolutely. You know what though, Carter, like that, what you just said, getting out of bed, like that is a big thing if you're feeling depressed, just being able to get out of bed.
Yeah.
I remember I once worked with a girl who was so depressed. She hadn't brushed her hair for a whole year. And she would like shower like, you know, once a week or so. So it was such like, it's baby steps, you know, literally get out of bed, brush your teeth. And if you really want to do more, maybe have a quick shower. Like small steps like that go a long way.
And that could be it for the day. Like that could be your goal for the day. That's it. Absolutely. Like you shouldn't overwhelm yourself or set any extra goals. Just do the like one thing on your to-do list. Being able to do that is such an accomplishment. And then to be able to tick it off, it just encourages you to do it again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're feeling like you can't even do that on your own, then that's when you need to get help, you know, speak to a therapist, and we'll talk about that. I'm just conscious of time as well. Let's try and get into
shall we start talking about anxiety as well?
Yes, let's do that. Yeah. So anxiety, I love talking about anxiety because anxiety isn't just one thing. There's 7 different types of anxiety disorders we have out there. And often when we talk about anxiety, people just think of generalized anxiety disorder. So that's the anxiety the common public know about. Whereas anxiety is divided into social anxiety, health anxiety, PTSD, panic, phobias, OCD, and of course the generalized anxiety disorder we talked about. So I kind of just want to talk about each one of those really briefly, so that we can see in ourselves and people around us, people we love, if they have any of those symptoms, and then to think about how we can get some support.
Especially nowadays, I feel like with anxiety, the image around anxiety is just sort of panic attacks, having panic attacks.
Mm.
As in when someone says anxiety, that's sort of what you imagine. But also nowadays as well, with this whole COVID situation, I think like with health anxiety might be something that's really on the rise, and just anxiety in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you want to start going through them so we can learn a bit from you, some psychoeducation.
We'll I think it's good to have. I feel like we don't have a platform to talk about these things, and we often just kind of just talk about anxiety, depression, but actually what is anxiety, you know, what is depression? How do I know I have it? How do I know my mom, my sister, my brother might have it? So I think that's why I was thinking, you know, just a basic brief psychoed around it, using this platform to kind of reach out to people would be really helpful. So in terms of, and so we talked about the 7 types of anxiety disorders. We'll go through them quite quickly. So there's generalized anxiety disorder, which is a common one. So that's basically feeling really worried, having a lot of worries about the future. Now these worries may have or may not have a real basis. So by real, I mean, so I'll give you an example. You might start hearing your radiator making noises, and a real anxiety would be, oh my God, it's making noises. I need to get help. I need to get someone to come and fix this. Okay. Yeah. So that's an actual anxiety. You need to sort it out.
Yeah.
A not so real, or what we call hypothetical anxiety, would be to then start thinking and worrying about what might happen. So what if it bursts? What if it bursts? Mm. And then water takes the entire house, and then I have to evacuate, and I have to find a new home, and then I can't pay for it, I lose my home, I lose my job. Can you see how that snowball,
like a snowball effect? Yeah
exactly. So anxiety is generally like that. It's going from one thing to another to another to another. It's like a chain effect of just worries. There's a lot of irritability with anxiety. People who are feeling anxious feel quite irritable. You know, if you're a mom, you might feel irritable with your kids. You might feel irritable with your husband. You might feel irritable with your parents, siblings. Just not have the patience to, you know, have a proper good conversation and to, you know, be yourself.
And just be calm, because you just can't.
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of always on edge.
Yeah.
So there's generalized anxiety disorder, also known as GAD. Then there's health anxiety, which you mentioned. What do you know of health anxiety, Kalpa?
I just, going by the name, I'd assume it means just anxiety about your health. So just like constant worry that there might be something wrong with you, or you might catch a disease or something like that, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, you're exactly that. It's being and becoming alarmed really quickly about any kind of physical or psychological symptom you might have, and kind of convincing yourself that there's something that you have and you're going to be diagnosed with a serious illness. So, you know, things to look out for if you know someone who might be having health anxiety is they'd be constantly checking for symptoms on their body. They'd think about going to a GP quite frequently. That, you know, they'd be doing lots of blood tests, etc. And actually, when they get the results, they may not believe it. So they'd say, you know what? Yeah, they said I don't have cancer, but I'm just going to do an MRI anyway, and I'll pay for it privately. A lot of sort of reassurance. Can you take this spot? Can you just check this to make sure it's not looking weird? It's not looking cancerous, or you know. A lot of googling, a lot of
WebMD, a lot of WebMD.
Yes, a lot of WebMD. Exactly. And like you said, with, you know, COVID, now I think you're right, health anxiety is increasing, and not necessarily in relation to COVID itself, but in relation to other physical health problems. Just kind of becoming aware of your health can do that. And when you see a lot of like negative news, that can bring it on as well.
And it's also like an anxiety about going to hospital with the whole COVID situation, perhaps, like being scared to go see a doctor about something that you might genuinely have. But
that's the, you know, when I said you might go to the GP a lot, the opposite would be what you just said, you know, actually avoiding the doctor, avoiding the hospital, because you're worried they'll find something.
And
you can't deal with that. What if they did find you have cancer, God forbid? So it's that kind of anxiety around your health. I've seen it a lot actually in the community, and it kind of just goes unnoticed. People just think of it as being cautious, not trusting the medical professionals. And like, I don't know whether that's the thing in the Iraqi community, but in the Iranian community, for sure, there's a lack of trust towards the NHS.
Especially if something goes wrong, or you've had a bad experience, like with one of your family members.
And it's totally understandable, right? But
to
a point. And then from a point onwards, it's a bit like, okay, no, you just need to trust the doctors. You're going overboard with it. Especially because we come from, you know, a culture where people go to a doctor whenever they want. You know, you pay the doctor, you see a specialist in the same day, you know. You don't necessarily just talk to the GP, you go and see a heart specialist quickly. Whereas obviously here, it's not like that. It doesn't work like that. You go to a GP, the GP does some, you know, does some tests, talk to you about it. And if they feel like they need to refer you, then that's when they refer you.
And then they'll refer you maybe next month. Until you get another appointment.
Exactly, but that all feeds into it, doesn't it?
Because exactly, it's like, oh, they don't care.
You just think, oh my god, I've got this heart condition. You're convinced you've got this heart condition, say, and you're not getting referred. And obviously it's important to get the referral, to get checked if you do have a real physical health problem, but we're talking about health anxiety here. So, you know, if you're a good way I like to talk about to know when you have it is to think about it as you're constantly switching. So one minute you're thinking I've got a heart problem, next you're thinking I've got cancer, next you're thinking you've got a tumor. So it kind of changes every couple of months, going from one disorder to another. If you're doing that, you probably have health anxiety.
Is it similar to hypochondria?
It is, yeah. There's another name for it, hypochondria. So social anxiety. What do you know of social anxiety?
So social anxiety, I would assume, is having anxiety around people, social gatherings. Like maybe public speaking is this really, you know, makes you panic.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of just the fear of being the focus of attention and fear of being humiliated and doing something that's embarrassing or looking stupid or sounding stupid, or worrying excessively about, say, blushing or stuttering. Even if you don't have a stutter, you know, you can still have that anxiety. So it's kind of just sort of being almost overly conscious about how you're coming across in a social situation. It's very common with the younger generation, so you know, the 18, 19, 20 year olds now, a lot of them have a lot of social anxiety, unfortunately. Not sure why exactly, but we're seeing a lot of it. And again, it's something that, you know, if you see it in someone, it's, you might just think, oh, they're just shy or they're just quiet.
Introvert.
Or you might think that, or you might think that about yourself. I'm just a quiet person. And you may well be, but again, we're talking about it when it's not just that.
Yeah. How does it really affect you? Like, does it make you, you know, stressed out? Does it make you tense?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make you avoid, like, you know, do you say you want to go to a gathering, but you think, you know what though, if I go, I'm just going to say something really stupid, or I'm just going to look really stupid. If that's happening, then it's probably not just being shy.
And also because it can really have a huge effect on your studies, on your career. If you want to you know, apply for a job, an interview, like that would be very scary.
Absolutely, really good point. Yes, and actually, you know what, a lot of people, when they come to seek help, that's where they're at. Just started uni, or they've just started a job, or they need to go for a job interview, and they're thinking, gosh, I can't do this, I can't avoid it anymore.
Exactly, yeah, time to get this sorted.
Shall we talk about OCD?
Yeah, let's go for it. OCD is quite a big one, actually. Yeah,
it is, isn't it? It's a very common one too.
Yeah, definitely.
So you earlier mentioned OCD. What do you know of OCD, Katha?
I know there's different types of OCD. I'm not sure like the labels exactly, but I know like there's cleanliness maybe, and there's having to have everything in a neat order, or obsessive thoughts, perhaps, like intrusive thoughts. Yeah.
So OCD stands for obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah.
So obsessions and compulsions are the two things that are common. Well, they're part of OCD. So obsessions are, you know, thoughts, ideas, images. And then compulsions are the act of doing things because of those obsessions, or not necessarily because of those obsessions. So I'll give you an example of an obsessive thought. I was trying to think of an Islamic one.
Like having to repeat your wudu.
Yes. Did I? What you just said, repeating your wudu, that's definitely OCD, but that's more of a compulsion because it's an act of doing it. So an obsessive thought would be something like, oh, was this riyah? Did I just do that out of riyah? Oh my God, I didn't do it for the sake of Allah. I did it for riyah.
Yeah, yeah.
And just kind of obsessing over it, not being able to let it go, and paying too much attention to it. A compulsion is what you just said. Like, you know, repeating your wudu, repeating your salah because you're not sure whether you did 3 rakat or 4 rakat.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Those are, you know, when it becomes repetitive, when it becomes unpleasant, when it becomes difficult to resist, these are the signs that you're not just being careful.
Yeah. And it really has an effect on your daily life, as all of these anxieties do. It really affects your life.
Yeah, absolutely. OCD is really, really difficult to live with. Both for yourself and for people around you. Because you're not just affecting yourself. You know, if you're a mom and you have OCD and you're constantly cleaning your child. I remember I once saw this lady in a mosque, actually, and she was screaming at her four-year-old and literally like stripped her down and washed her in the mosque toilet.
Oh my goodness.
Because she was like, look, you've made this place najis now. I don't know what was happening. All I know was that it was not a good thing to watch. Like,
yeah, tahara and najasa is a big one as well in OCD.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. It's one of the biggest things, isn't it?
Yeah.
In our fiqh, in our religion.
Yeah, but even though we know, if you don't know for sure if something's najis or if you haven't seen with your eye that it's become najis with something like urine or blood or something that has ayn al najasa,
yeah,
then it's not najis for you.
No, I know.
It's like even if you go onto a bus,
as it should be.
Yeah, even if you go onto a bus thinking, for example, okay, well, today it was raining. Maybe there was a dog sitting on one of these seats. So therefore, and I'm wet. And what if I sit on it and it becomes najis? Like, I remember having these thoughts. And then I was like, but I didn't see it with my eyes. Like, so it's not najis for me.
Yeah.
So as long as you haven't seen it with your eyes, it's not najis. Khalas, full stop. Like, don't overcomplicate it.
Yeah. Do you know what, though? Like, what you did there, Katha, you saying and being able to make that difference and say, you know what though, Katha, you haven't seen it, you can just get on with it, sit.
That is
difference between you and someone who's got OCD, because
OCD,
someone who's got
exactly
OCD,
they can't keep
obsessing over it. They're just gonna keep saying no, I can't. And if they did actually sit where they, you know, on that chair, they'd go home and wash everything. Okay, I know we're tight on time, so we'll quickly touch on panic and PTSD as well, because they're quite big ones. So PTSD, it's when you start to, well, you start having PTSD after you're exposed to a stressful event or a situation. So, you know, symptoms of PTSD are flashbacks, vivid memories, nightmares, being hypervigilant, so being quite jumpy. A lot of the times people end up with PTSD after having a traumatic birth, after a car accident, after
an assault.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. After, you know, fleeing a country, of course, is a very typical one. Often people only see PTSD if you've just, you know, been in a war zone. Whereas it can literally happen from, you know, seeing someone even being attacked, not even being the victim yourself. If you've seen someone on the street get attacked, you might have PTSD from that.
And
a lot of the times people, again, just see it as, I'm remembering it, it's just the bad experience I had, I just need to let time heal it. Let me tell you something, PTSD might get better with time, but it doesn't fully heal. So if you've got trauma, you need to have that treated.
It can't be dismissed. These things cannot be dismissed. Like, we're so used to dismissing our mental health issues.
Yeah, absolutely. We always do. We love it. We're good at it.
I can't have PTSD. No.
No, and it's such a, especially with PTSD, actually, there's such a negative label to it. It's almost like, well, I'm not good enough to have PTSD, almost. Like, you know, what happened to me wasn't bad enough, you know, like, you just saw someone get assaulted,
survivor guilt,
get over it, someone's just fleeing from Syria and they've got PTSD, you don't have PTSD, like, no, that's not the case, you can still have PTSD. You know, a lot of the times people just kind of just dismiss it, they don't see it as a problem, they just think it's just, you know, it was just a stressful event, I'll let time pass. But actually, you know, if you're getting nightmares, if you're having flashbacks, if you're getting vivid memories, if you're jumpy, if the sound of a siren is making you jump, those are symptoms. Those are symptoms of PTSD. And you know what? The treatment for PTSD is so robust, Kalsa. It's so good. There's so much evidence for it. It's one of the best ones out there. It's really effective. So, you know, if you've had a traumatic experience, get help. PTSD is easy to treat.
thing is, I feel like a lot of people can't define trauma. Like, they don't know, like, to what extent does it have to be traumatic? Like, because when you say trauma, it's like something that's really intense, really extreme. But yeah, it doesn't have to be like that, does it?
No, it doesn't. Look, yeah. I think it can go in exact opposite direction. You can have a really traumatic experience in your life and actually not have any symptoms of PTSD. Or you can have a experience where in your eyes is not considered very traumatic, like, you know, it's mild, yeah, and you end up with PTSD. So there's no way of really telling. You just need to pay attention to your mental health, pay attention to
your symptoms.
You know, definitely, if you have those symptoms we talked about, like, you know, vivid memories, flashbacks,
get them checked
nightmares,
out.
You know, being jumpy, being hypervigilant, you know, being really scared to go out because you're worried someone's going to be behind you and stab you, for example. Even if your experience hasn't been a stabbing, by the way, it could be a traumatic birth, but you can still have that hypervigilance around sort of being attacked. Or someone breaking into your house or something like that. Those are symptoms that, you know, suggest that you might have PTSD.
Yeah, so definitely, like, go get it checked out, especially because it can be treated so easily. So it's such a shame to just continue living with it and suffering with it when you can easily get treated for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry, just one thing I want to say on that, actually, with PTSD, you know, me and you, we're talking about a single incident PTSD. There are people who have multiple traumas. You know, if someone's escaped war, for example, it won't be just a single thing. It'll be a complex sort of number of incidences, number of traumas. And that is a lot more difficult to treat. But all the reasons to get help, right? Because if it's so many traumas, it's going to affect you more for longer.
Can even be like domestic abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, these things are traumatic. They're not just mild. You don't just get over it.
Yes, thank you. Very good point. And we know that because of COVID and people being at home, domestic abuse has been on the rise.
On the rise, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I bet you there will be people listening to this podcast who have experienced it.
Yeah. And not knowing that, you know, they could possibly be experiencing PTSD.
Absolutely.
And that there's a treatment for it. So like, if you are experiencing any of these symptoms, please do talk to a healthcare professional, to your GP, to anyone, seek treatment, inshallah.
Let's talk about panic. I mean, there's also phobias, but I think phobias is more well known. So we'll talk about panic is, again, a common one. It's like an intense episode of discomfort. So it's like the other end of the anxiety disorder spectrum. So it's like the extreme end of it is when you start to have, you know, feeling, you start to feel dizzy, you start to feel faint, you have your heart beating out of your chest, you can't breathe right, you're trembling.
There's a lot of physical symptoms.
Exactly, a lot of physical symptoms, and a lot of the times people also think that they might be dying, they might be fainting, they might have a heart attack.
And
sometimes people actually even experience something like an out-of-body experience. They feel like they're not them. It's like they look at themselves from a distance,
like they disassociate.
It's a little bit like dissociation, but it's not exactly dissociation. So it's, again, panic is an easy one to get treatment for, and it's very, very, very horrible to live with.
Panic
is a really nasty one. You know, it stops you from doing things. That's another thing. If you've got panic, what to look out for is if it stops you from doing the things that you would want to do. So if you want to go out, if you want to get in a lift, if you want to get in a car, if you you know, if you want to go running even, and you start thinking, but if I go, I might have a panic attack, my heart might start beating too fast, I might, you know, get worried about fainting. That is all kind of intertwined with panic.
Is it a random, like, do you get, is it a random episode, or does it have to be triggered by something?
It doesn't always have to be triggered by something. It can be completely random. Often it is triggered by something. It might be something that you're not even aware of, you know. So it might be completely subconscious.
Wow, yeah.
So it might be, I'll give you an example. you might have a fear of choking, okay? And you get a panic if you think about choking, okay? Or if you see someone choking. So it might be that you're watching something on TV and someone looks like they're about to choke, and you start having a panic attack. And you may not necessarily link that with the choking. You might just think, oh, that was a really weird panic attack. It came out of nowhere. But actually, yeah, if you start to explore it and to try and understand what triggers your panic, you might notice there's a link, there's an association. But saying that, there's not always an association.
No, that's really difficult, like, because you never know. You can just strike at any time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we've covered the common mental health problems out there, Kauthar.
We've covered quite a lot. Thank you so much, Hania. Like, honestly, it's been so insightful.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. So important, yeah.
So, first of all, in terms of getting help, I think if you've noticed any of these symptoms in you or in someone else, talk about it. You know, even if it's just a close friend, it's a parent, it's a sibling, talk to someone. You know, say to them, I'm experiencing some of these problems. What do you think about it? Like, you know, and try and get help. But if you can't get the help, the professional help, at least talk to someone. Because even talking about it, sharing that burden, helps.
And it's like, don't be discouraged as well if you talk to someone and they don't really understand.
Yeah, exactly. Go read,
because it can be quite discouraging. Yeah, but as in, I think it's really important, definitely just make an appointment with your GP.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's like the first point of, especially if it's quite severe, if it's really affecting you. Just confide in a trustworthy friend or something.
Someone, go read about it.
There's so much information.
There's so much information out there. And on that note, so I'm just gonna signpost the listeners to places they can get some help from. So
yes, that would be great.
So if you go on Google and you just type in self-help material Northumberland, the area up north, it takes you to a page where there's lots of leaflets and lots of self-help booklets on all these topics we've talked about and more.
Wow, yeah. Honestly, just reading about it, and sort of, I think one of the issues with mental health is that our feelings don't get validated. And we don't know why we're feeling what we're feeling, and we feel weird, and we feel like it's just, there's something wrong with me, but I can't quite put my finger on it. But when you read about it and you educate yourself about it, you're like, okay, so this is why, and this is what's happening.
Absolutely.
It's really important to get that validation.
And it's so empowering knowing that you're not weird, knowing that there's something that you can get help from, you know.
And there's a lot of people out there that are experiencing the same thing. So you're not the only one. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, the statistics for depression and anxiety is a lot. Like, I think for depression, it's 1 in 3, isn't it? And for anxiety, I know it's similar figures. And anxiety is, I think it's even more common in a way, because there's so many different anxiety forms and people just don't know. Like, you know, you may have it and not realize you have it.
Another issue is that why we talk about depression and anxiety together is that they're comorbid as well. Quite a lot of the time, people who suffer from depression, they can also be suffering from anxiety, and vice versa. So
really good point.
Sometimes they come hand in hand. So if you're getting shot from both sides, honestly, like, keep an eye on it and seek help, get help. There's so much help available out there.
Absolutely, exactly. So much help out there. In terms of NHS kind of help, so, you know, I talked about IAPS at the start of the podcast. If you go to the GP, they'll refer you to your local IAPS. But you know what, the great thing about IAPS services is often they actually accept self-referrals. So you don't need to talk to a GP if you don't want to. You can just find your local IAPS. You know, if you type in, say you live in Harrow, if you type into Google Harrow IAPS, you'll find your local Harrow IAPS. And you can literally just refer yourself and not even go through the GP. But if you don't want to go through the NHS in general, you can always get help privately as well. So obviously you have to pay more for it, but some people prefer that.
It can be more customized to you as well. So if you want a Muslim, if you want, I think like you mentioned, Hania, before, a female, a male, you can choose.
Yeah,
when it's private.
Exactly.
And also, I know with IAPT as well, it's limited to maybe 6 to 8 sessions. With private, you can go as many sessions as you like.
Yeah, so with IAPT, it depends on what service you're being offered. If you're being offered low intensity cognitive behavioral therapy, it's 4 to 6 sessions usually. Right, if you're being offered high intensity CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy in a sense, it can go up to 12 sessions, or sometimes, depending on the service, even more. But yeah, it is more limited, and it is just short term, so it's not ongoing, it's not something you can continue doing. It's a short term limited number of sessions, regardless of what service you go to, if it's private.
A good thing about it, because it means you're not stuck to it for the rest of your life. You get the treatment, you sort yourself out, sort out your life, and that's it. You can move on, and you've learned a lot. And inshallah, it's really changed.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just to want to add the private kind of route as well, Kautha, for your listeners. Yeah. So if they want CBT, they can go on their BABCP website and just find themselves a CBT therapist. If they want a counselor, they go on the BACP website. BACP. So they sound very similar, just a few letters here and there. That's different. And they get counselling privately if they want. Again, IAPT services often do have counsellors, so counselling is different to CBT.
Yeah. Could you just quickly mention the difference between the counselling and the CBT?
Yeah. So counselling. So CBT is more. What's the word?
Practical.
It's more about. Huh.
It's more practical. It gives you practical. Sort of, you get homework, you go home, you change your behavior, your thoughts.
Absolutely. With counseling, there's also homework, but just not as much. And it's a lot more explorative. It's a lot more looking at your past. And although CBT is the same, it does look at your past, of course. It is actually focused more so on the here and now. You know, counseling is probably more suited if you need to talk about some of these feelings that you just kind of want to talk about it, you know,
and get things off your chest,
get things off your chest, make sense of it, understand how it's affecting you, understand what it's doing to you. Counseling often isn't helpful for anxiety disorders. In fact, so there's something called the NICE guidelines. I don't know if you've heard of them.
The NICE.
Yeah.
The NICE. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
No, so there's something called the NICE guidelines. Basically, they're NHS guidelines for everything, you know, physical and mental. And they basically, the guidelines tell you what to do. So, for example, if you've got depression, how many sessions to offer and how to recognize it, etc. So every disorder, physical or mental, has a NICE guideline attached to it. Now, for anxiety disorders, the NICE guidelines do not recommend counseling. They recommend mostly CBT. So CBT is more helpful for counseling. CBT is more helpful for anxiety, whereas counseling would be more helpful or as helpful for depression. Depression, bereavement, you know, loss of something. So, you know, if you've, you know, loss of a relationship, loss of a job.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, counseling might be better suited.
Yeah. Relationship issues, like family issues as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Inshallah, we will include these links. We'll probably post them up when we post this episode, so that like if there's any spelling or anything like that, we can make sure that the listeners can get access to the right places.
Sure. That's a good idea. Thank you.
So we'll provide all the information, inshallah. Yes.
I just want to add one last thing, and that is that we, as like us in our community, you know, we're all immigrants, you know, whether we're the first generation, second, third generation, we're all immigrants essentially. Right now, immigration creates a lot of problems. You know, it's a new life, it's a new country, it's a new language, it's a new environment. A lot of times people come because they've escaped something really traumatic. So immigration can create a lot of mental health problems. And you know, the older generation, so our parents, our grandparents, likely didn't get any support. You know, they kind of lived with it, they got on with it. But trauma, anxiety, depression, that kind of thing, can be passed down. And by passed down, I don't mean genetically. I mean, you know, through upbringing, through yeah. the experiences you've had, you sort of kind of pass it on to your children.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't stop this cycle at some point, we're just going to keep passing it on.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know, if you're hearing some of these symptoms that you have, you've seen in yourself, in your parent, in your sibling, in your friend, get that help, because you don't want to keep passing it on. We need to break this chain at some point.
Yeah. And honestly, it's just, it really will change a person's life. Like, if you're really suffering from anxiety, from depression, honestly, it's so worth getting the help, because it'll change your mindset. It'll make you feel better. It'll just, there's, I mean, it's all positives. I don't see any negatives to getting help.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, yeah. Thank you so much, Hania, for this incredible, you know, like, episode filled with such gems of knowledge.
Thank you, Kausar.
It's been an
absolute pleasure.
Alhamdulillah. I'm so glad that our listeners got to hear everything, like all this information about anxiety, different anxieties and depression, and the different kinds of help that they can get and that's available for them. Yeah, so inshallah, this helps you guys listening, inshallah. And yeah, so
thank you for listening to me. Thank you for bearing with me. I hope what I shared was helpful. I'm sorry if I said things that, you know, were not correct, or if I gave you wrong information. You know, if there is anything that you don't agree with, you know, come reach out to me. Or if you want something that you want to hear more about, you want to understand something a bit more, again, come reach out to me. I'd be happy to talk to someone if they want to talk to me about these things.
Absolutely. And we'll post your profile as well, inshallah, with the episode, so they can contact you.
Thank you.
Well, the information has been really helpful for me. The different symptoms, things to look out for. I feel very educated now in terms of mental health and what to look out for. So, alhamdulillah. And thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for listening to this. And
thank you. Yes.
Thank you for listening in. Tune in to next week's episode on Mental Health First Aid with Sister Amina Taqi.